Hello, welcome back to the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. Thursday afternoon, live, coming from you and coming at you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, in the back of Roberta's, where they are expanding once again, building out their restaurant to include their outdoor patio as their new next indoor space. So if you hear any of the drilling, that's just a Les up on the roof. But we wanted to thank Whole Foods Market, reminding you that every bite has a story. So whether it's a tomato, a muffin, or a T-bone steak, your conscious food choices can change the planet. Because at Whole Foods Market, every single purchase you make helps us support things like animal welfare, organic agriculture, equitable trade, and energy offsets. Let's think before we eat, and let's retake our plates. Thanks to Whole Foods for sponsoring today's show.
Thanks, Heather. This is Erin. Welcome to the Heritage Radio Farm Report. We have an amazing guest in studio, Sabrina Walensky of Corbin Hill Road Farm. Sabrina, you said when we were chatting before the show that you kind of do all the non-sexy work in social entrepreneurship. Can you give us a quick rundown of like some of your roles at the farm?
Sure. Well, I work in the New York City office, which is based up in Harlem. I do bookkeeping, marketing, website, IT, figuring out why our email isn't going through, attempting to update our Twitter and Facebook pages, and, you know, the occasional how do we merge a bunch of PDFs into one file so we don't bombard our partners with emails.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. That sounds kind of sexy.
It is.
It is.
So tell us a little bit about Corbin Hill Road Farm. It's a farm, but you're in Harlem. What's the story?
Sure. Well, Corbin Hill Road Farm is a 95-acre farm in Schoharie County, which is about 40 miles west of Albany. And the farm was founded to provide fresh food to the South Bronx and Harlem and to other areas in New York City that are food deserts. The farm is our upstate hub. We also have a downstate hub, which is our Harlem office, which coordinates our New York City activity, which includes distributing to 14 partners on a weekly basis during the prime growing season, as well as a growing list of customers for our year-round direct order service, where we specialize in providing food for Head Start centers, charter schools, and other community food businesses. So we have, I like to think of it as a bicycle. We have two spokes, and then those spokes go out and create the networks, and the two of them together create movement to promote food justice and healthy eating.
Now, when I found out that, you know, you were going to be on the show, I was most interested really about this community shareholder farm. I kind of wanted to hear what the difference between a community shareholder farm and like something like a CSA, community supported agriculture, really is.
Sure. Well, the traditional CSA model has a couple of restrictions that don't necessarily translate well or adapt well to low-income communities who are our primary communities. We serve low-income areas, supportive housing, and other areas that just generally are not able to buy food at market rates, mm-hmm. Especially, you know, larger institutions. So the traditional CSA model, you have to pay up front at the beginning of the season. You can pay anywhere from $300 upwards. There's one supposedly that has a $1,000 membership fee. CSAs also, you don't get your money back at the end of the season if you don't pick up. Wow. Or if, you know, if something happens. As well as there's the chance of risk. You know, if the farmer isn't able to produce, you don't get your food.
Yeah, that's the CSA model, is you essentially share the risk with the farmer.
Which is great, but if you're in a position where, you know, even buying $10 worth of groceries a week is a problem, paying $300 in March for something you're not going to get until June isn't necessarily an option. So what we've done is taken the CSA model and adapted it to not only meet the needs of low-income communities, but enhance those communities through health and economic citizenship. So for example, we only require payment 1 week in advance of the delivery, as well as a symbolic 2-week deposit at the time of your first delivery, just to act as a cushion you can draw upon it at the end of the season, during the season. We also shield the shareholders from the risk. Instead of in a traditional CSA, you're only purchasing from one farm. That's changing now. A lot of farmers are now creating networks of farms, which is what we've done. Mm-hmm. So along with the produce from our farm, this week we have collard greens from our farm. We purchase from two or three other farmers, and soon that will be four or five other farmers, to help supplement what we're not able to grow. Because in reality, we don't need to grow everything we need. There are farmers down the road doing an amazing job growing things that we were going to buy anyway. So why duplicate when we can support other businesses? So that shields the shareholders from the risk of if our farm isn't able to produce enough.
So you're going to turn to a consortium of sorts.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how much, just so we can get a sense, like what is a weekly share cost?
Well, the base price for our partial share, which is about 6 to 8 items, is $9. And the base price for a full share, which is 8 to 10, is $18. One of our sites is able to subsidize up to 60% of the share cost for their shareholders so that it's more affordable. For example, that on that rate, the partial share is $3.75 and a full share is $7.25, $7.50, which is much more reasonable for people in the communities we serve. We also, unlike many CSAs, we accept food stamps, and we're working on expanding our roster of payment plans for next season. So that way, we're enabling everyone to be able to purchase rather than people who can float the cash or write a check.
That sounds great. I think, you know, I've been learning a lot about food deserts, like you said, and food access. And it's wonderful that you guys have found a model that's working for you to bring food into some of these communities. Now, this project, I mean, how long has it been going on? Can you give us a sense of how it started? What were the origins?
Sure. Well, this Corbin Hill is the brainchild of Dennis Derrick, who is a professor at Milano, the New School for Management and Urban Policy. And I remember back in the day, it was a goat farm. So it's evolved. And in 2009, he found the land for the farm and purchased it middle of January, which, if you're familiar with upstate New York, is not a pleasant time of the year to visit. And since then, after purchasing the land, that's when it really started to take shape and to grow. And it was just last fall that he took the plunge and said, we're gonna start in June. And so it really, we had about,
Here we go. We're farmers now.
We had about 8 months to figure out how to make this happen. And we're still figuring it out as we go into our second to last delivery.
But it's happening.
It's happening right now. We have a distribution going on right up by Fordham. So I want to say hello to Choi Wah Wong, one of my coworkers who is distributing food up at Montefiore Health Center. So.
Thanks for getting it out there today.
Yeah.
We actually kind of wanted to ask what, you know, institutions, what kind of role they're playing in helping, you know, Cabo Hill Road Farm right now.
Sure. Well, just like with our farmers, you know, who are already doing something well, why duplicate it? The organizations we partner with are already in the communities working with, you know, food justice and food advocacy. So why duplicate what they're already doing? So we've partnered with 14 organizations throughout the South Bronx and Harlem, Northern Manhattan, who already have a foothold in the community, and we distribute our food through them. The food is, we have about 12 sites where we distribute, and the organizations help enroll people, help manage the distribution, provide us with feedback, and as well as contribute to the evolution of our program and figure out what step it's going to take for next season.
So you guys are kind of rounding out the end of your first season here.
Yes.
Where's the money coming from? How did you guys finance the project?
We are a for-profit social venture, which means that our company is founded by private equity. We have an amazing group of angel investors who got us through the first season. We're currently doing another round of equity investment, as well as looking into some other options for financing. And eventually, we will be able to be self-sustaining and run off of the revenue generated by not only the farm share program, but our direct service
offerings. So for people, that would want to get in touch with you to maybe invest, what's the best way for them to reach you?
info@corbinhillfarm.com.
Okay, just in case any of you out there listening and want to get involved in round two, ding, 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 time is ticking.
It's a great chance to get involved with something that's going to become a very valuable resource in the coming years.
Well, it sounds like it already is a pretty valuable resource.
I like to think so, yes.
I would definitely agree.
Yeah.
I mean, one day our gas is going to, you know, eventually cost more than what it is right now. So we're going to have to stick with this local movement just a bit more.
Yeah.
As time goes on, probably. I don't know if that's one of the challenges you run into with, like, distribution and you know, all the logistics with getting things from one place to the other. And now that you guys are becoming kind of like a consortium, like, what are some of these issues you run into?
Gas. The cost of gas.
Yes. I guess I hit the nail on the head.
You know, we see the truck come in and I see the gas money going out. So it's, we'll be honest, transportation, it's expensive. You know, and Schoharie is not close. So our truck takes a lot of gas. Mm-hmm. We also have a refrigerated truck, so it does take a lot of energy. It's not necessarily the most green form of transportation, but for our needs, it keeps the produce fresh, and we're filling the truck pretty much.
And it keeps the farms in business.
Exactly. We're doing something that the farmers up there haven't done before. Before us, their food wasn't reaching New York City. It was going out into the local areas, the major terminals upstate, or, you know, in some case, like in the case of the corn, just rotting in the field because it wasn't being moved. This is the first season that some of the farmers have not had an abundance of excess corn, which was our benefit because it was absolutely delicious.
I'm sure.
Delicious. Eat it raw. It was great.
Oh, I'm a big fan. Yeah. So let's talk about the farmers a little bit. You guys are growing food on your farm and then you're partnering with a couple of other farmers. How did you seek them out and what do those relationships look like? We were talking a little bit before kind of how you were setting the prices for the farmers and accessing this new market in Harlem, in the Bronx, where they probably, you know, haven't been before.
Sure. Again, I have to attribute all of this to Dennis. It's the amount of work he's put in into making the company work, building the relationships is tremendous. So Dennis, we salute you. And again, all the farmers that we're working with now really just came through happenstance and being in the right place in the right time. Some of them have sought us out. We actually, there was a New York Times article on the day of our first launch, and one of our current farmers read the article, wrote us, said, "I have a ton of cilantro." We said, "We need a ton of cilantro. Let's talk."
Literally a ton of cilantro?
Quite possibly.
Yeah?
Wow. Quite possibly. I just know it was a lot of cilantro.
Oh, man.
Which, by the way, was very hard for us to get at a reasonable price this season. So it was the number one herb requested, and the day it launched, it was fantastic. So it's a combination of people coming to us, people we've found, or Dennis has found through research and just knowing the people in the county. It's a county of about 40,000 people, so it's not that big. And we were just fortunate that people heard about what was going on and wanted to be a part of it because they saw the importance of everything.
So,
we're going to take a short break. We got lots more to talk about. We'll be right back.
Break.
I know. We'll be right back. Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report.
Welcome back to the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to The Farm Report. We are live in studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Sabrina, I am glad to be back from the break. We have tons more questions for you and not a ton more time.
Oh, no.
I want to just kind of suss out a little bit what the role of your organization is, because it sounds like you guys are doing a lot of different things, some distribution, some partnership, growing food. What does the organizational structure kind of look like?
Well, now we are a distributor that owns a farm. Before, we had that flipped. We were a farm that distributes, and we realized that what's really needed now is not just another farm, but a distributor who gets the food from where it's grown to where it's needed, rather than someone just producing it and happening to truck it in once a week. So we are a distributor. We do two weekly runs from upstate for our two programs, which is also something new to our company. We just launched, on top of our farm share service, we launched a direct ordering service. And we're in almost our second month of that program. So,
is it growing?
It is growing. We started some at a new site this week, and our range of offerings for that is continuing to grow.
Okay, what is that site? What do you mean, like a new farm?
Not a new farm. We've actually found some vendors who have prepared food because for a lot of our customers, prep time is scarce. Yeah. It's for schools. You know, peeling a squash is not necessarily the best use of your time when you have to do 1,700 meals. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we found vendors who have done that prep work locally in Schoharie County.
Wow.
So we can not only get fresh food to schools, but get fresh food to schools that they haven't necessarily been able to access before.
Wow. That's great. So that sounds like a whole nother thing. And I think working in these communities, you know, you run into kind of some surprising challenges, one of them being prep time. I feel like when I've heard you speak in the past, you mentioned something about refrigerator size.
Yeah. You don't necessarily think about it, but where are you going to put all this fresh food that you're bringing in? One of our sites, we found out that the reason why people were dropping out is because they had mini fridges and weren't able to store all the produce. The schools and Head Starts we work at, very limited storage space. You know, they have to do multiple orders per week because they just don't have anywhere to put the food. So there are all these little hidden gems of opportunity that we're discovering now and trying to embrace.
Well, and also, you know, with some of the farms you're working with, a lot of people sometimes don't know how to use some of the vegetables that are coming out certain times of the year. So the fact that you guys are preparing them so that they're ready to use, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, that's going to help a lot of people, I feel like, bring it in and just able to use it and want to use it.
Yeah, well, and even with our farm share, you know, we've had kale, unfortunately, has been the
dark horse. It's always the talk. Yeah, kale, what do we do with this?
You know, I love it, and it's forced us to really think creatively about how can we introduce kale to people other than you can juice it.
Because if you don't have a fridge, you probably also don't have a juicer.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's about education. And it's about taking risks. We ask people to take a risk with us. Try kale. If you don't like it, swap it out next week. But at least try it once.
I'm definitely with you. I actually saw something on like someone who was making like dehydrated kale chips or something. I don't know where I saw this, but it really was. It was because there was like so much of it available at a pretty good price. And they wanted to introduce good food to the children. So they made it into chips.
They're actually pretty good.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we have someone. Excuse me. Now, we're getting into the cold season. And as I thought, that kind of means the farm might be dead, but maybe not. Tell me, I mean, what do we have going on in these next couple months?
We have some hot, hot root vegetable action going on. I am discovering things you can do with root vegetables I never knew. Parsnip bread.
Delicious.
That's my plan tonight. Huh. But our distributors are able to supply us with a lot of food that's been flash frozen. There's a brand new flash freezing plant that opened up one exit away from us.
A whole plant for flash freezing.
And we have some of the amazing corn has been flash freezed. We're testing that out. Our suppliers are now doing the prepped food, which means that a lot of things that are no longer being grown, tomatoes, for example, mm-hmm. we can supply in mass quantities and that are pre-cut. So prep time.
Perfect.
Minimized. And we're also in early brainstorming sessions about how to do a root vegetable farm share during the winter season at a couple of sites. So just because the farm isn't growing doesn't mean we're not operating.
Definitely not. Well, if anything, you're making it more accessible and more easy for more people to sign on and hopefully, you know, buy throughout the year.
We're hoping for 1,000 shareholders next summer. So
what do we got to do to get that word out? What's the website one more time?
CorbinHillFarm.com. And if you stay tuned on the website, we're going to be posting more information about how you can get involved next season.
Awesome.
Excellent. And just to touch base quickly before we bring Gene on, Heather and I talk a lot about non-farming farm skills. You know, a lot of times when people want to get involved in food and food access issues, they're like, oh, I'll go volunteer on a farm or I'll go start a community garden plot. But it sounds like through your organization, there's a lot of other ways for people who want to address some of these food and food policy issues to get involved. Like, what are some of the skill sets that you're looking for that your organization needs, or maybe things you've run into where you're like, I can't believe I need to know how to do this, but it's totally important to this work?
I would say cultural sensitivity, and just understanding that what you eat is not necessarily what your next door neighbor eats. And how do you go about addressing that? You know, for example, I like kale, but the shareholder I'm signing in may have never heard of it. So how, you know, I'm just understanding how to talk to people about things that are unusual or are different, and helping understanding that change is incremental and not all at once, and that you just have to be patient with people sometimes, and patient with communities, because this becoming a shareholder in our farm share program is a learning experience, and just understanding that it's going to take 23 weeks, but we are making an incremental difference.
Definitely, and a good one.
Yeah.
At that.
Before we go, any kind of like your have a magic wand, you can wave it, you know, 5 years from now, what do things look like?
5 years from now, we have 5,000 shareholders, an updated shareholder database system.
Mm-hmm.
We have partners who are not only engaging through the farm share program, but also through our direct ordering service so that we can be providing our communities with food year round. We have healthier children, healthier communities, and eventually we hope that in 5 years, we can start to introduce the idea of for communities to become owners of the farm, in the financial sense, actually own, you know, stock in the company, and eventually be able to feed that money back into the community.
Yeah. And if you're, you know, somewhere near Schoharie County and you have a farm and you're looking for an outlet and you don't yet know about Cobbett Hill Road Farm, please do get in touch with them. Info at Cobbett Hill Farm.
Corbett Hill Farm.
I'm so sorry.
That's
CorbettHillFarm.com. Okay. And, you know, just reach out and, you know, become part of the network. And that's really, you know, what we're all about is just continuing to provide good food to the city and to everyone around us. So,
thanks. Thanks so much for coming in today, Sabrina, all the way from Harlem.
Yeah, it's a different Bushwick. Borough.
So do we have Jean on the line?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Jean. Welcome.
Thank you.
Want to quickly introduce Jean. She is the publicity corner. Ooh, apparently that's a difficult one for me. I can't say it.
Publicity coordinator. Is that what we're going with?
Yes, all from right. NYC. And she's here to tell us a little bit about what's happening this week and next at Green Markets. Jean, what are you guys promoting?
We are promoting Grains Week. We're very, very, very excited about it. So we're going to have from November 14th through the 21st a whole manner of programs that are all going to center around promoting what our regional growers are growing in terms of whole grains and what they're starting to mill to bring flour into market. So it's very exciting, and it's really, we started a conversation about 3 years ago talking to some growers about how we could get more local flour available for our bakers who come into the program, and that, you know, we realized that there was sort of a lack of grain being grown, but then there weren't enough mills to mill it anyway. So we realized it was a much larger sort of infrastructure question. So 3 years have gone by. We have identified new growers, new millers, new bakers, and now we're really starting to see some new products come into the market, which is exciting. So in order to get the word out about what they've got, we are going to have a home baker's meetup on the 15th, and the cost of admission is simply a loaf of your own home-baked bread.
Huh.
So we already have about 30 people signed up to come. So if you want to come to that, you better get your word in quick.
And make a big loaf of bread.
Seriously. Make a loaf of bread, yeah. And, you know, it could be cornbread or it could be leavened whole wheat bread if that's what you're interested in. But it'll be a chance for everyone to kind of bring their bread to the table and sample what everybody else is bringing and talk about how to get, like, a better crust or if your starter wasn't working or kind of talk shop and swap stories about how baking at home is going. So that's on Monday night. And then on Wednesday night, we're going to have an educated eater panel at the new school. So we're going to have
The new school.
Yeah, they are blowing it up lately.
Tell everyone you know to come. So we're going to have a grower, a miller, a baker, and then Michael Anthony is going to talk as a chef who's been using a lot of whole grains on his menu. And then Nathan Leamy, who also teaches bread baking classes at the Brooklyn Kitchen but had a Watson Fellowship and studied wheat production around the world. He'll talk sort of as a culinary historian.
Around the world. Yeah.
So huge. They're going to talk about past, present, and future of grains in our region.
And where do we go to find more about, to learn more about this and how we can get involved?
Sure.
In these
if you
events?
Go to grownyc.org, there's a whole link to Grains Week right on the front page.
Cool.
Cool. And you can sign up. Some events have tickets, but everything's pretty cheap. So hopefully we'll get big crowds.
What are you most looking forward to?
I'm most looking forward to, well, you know, Erin is going to come and do a cooking demonstration at Union Square, which will be awesome.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just read your recipe. It looks great.
Ooh, Erin, what are you making? Thanks for sharing.
I'm working with rye chops. I got a bag of them from the market last week, something I've never used before. They're basically rye berries that have been chopped in half, and I'm doing a rye zotto.
You are really good. Awesome.
With mushrooms and bacon. It should be pretty delicious, so definitely next Wednesday I'll be at Union Square from 12:30 to 3:30, so come by for a taste.
Yeah.
Great. And then the whole week ends with a big pancake breakfast at New Amsterdam Market on the 21st. So it's the Sunday before Thanksgiving. I think a lot of people will be there, and we're going to make spelt pancakes and maybe some pancakes with emmer and whole wheat pancakes, and it should be really fun.
That does sound pretty awesome.
I'm hungry.
It's almost that time for sure. Cool. So Grain Week, anything else like that we're hoping, like, is something that we want to do every year? Is this your first time doing it?
It's our first time doing it. We're just going to see how it goes. I guess what's exciting is that once we kind of had an idea for an educated eater panel, and then we had an idea for a bread baker's meetup, and then we were like, oh, we should have a pancake breakfast. And as our ideas have grown, we realized there are a lot of people in the city who are interested in this. And so we've got a lot of partners around town. Working with New School has been really fun. Working with New Amsterdam Market has been great so far. And so we're spreading the grains around the city, which is great.
Definitely.
That's awesome. And the birds will be happy, I think.
They'll be really pleased.
Oh, sure.
Well, thanks so much for calling in to share that with us. Jean, Sabrina, thanks for coming down. It was wonderful to have you on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Do we have Ben Flanner next week?
We do have Ben
awesome.
Flanner of the Brooklyn Grange.
Hell yeah. We want to hear about their first season, sweet success. And so tune in next Thursday live, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Always archive, podcast, Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. We are out for today. Thank you, Sabrina. Thank you, Jean.
Later.
Thanks,
you've been listening to The Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. Tune in every week, Thursday at 1 p.m. Today on HRN. Later, we got Flash Talks Cash at 4:30. And that'll be it for the week. This week, one more thing to promote. Full Service, a monthly base party in Bushwick at Tandem Bar, will be taking place this Friday. So go to fullserviceparty.com for more information. Again, you've been listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in.